You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So hype right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama, baby, ma. Anything's possible.
Rainy days back with the vengeance. Back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. Ooh. This the truth like 34. Yeah. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, focus like Danny at the deadline, global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line, play it in between time. I'ma throw my Siege jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day, trying to stay in tune with the Siege, that's the best way. Melly.
Welcome back. This is the Locked On Celtics Podcast. I want to thank you for making us part of your daily routine. I am John Corrales. I'm here covering the Celtics for MassLive.com. I'm your host. And today we're going to talk a little bit about the Shamrock Gala. I just got back from the Shamrock Gala. I'm recording this show about 1 a.m. Friday. It's late, but it was fun. It was good to see it. It's my first Shamrock Gala. I'll talk about that in a little bit. In the second segment, I'll talk a little bit about the practice that happened earlier in the day, a couple of nuggets that came out of that. I'll start by talking about a couple of extensions, Bradley Beal and Jaylen Brown, the negotiations that go along with that. Now, later on in the podcast, at the end, we'll have a special NHL season preview from the Locked On Bruins podcast. We're very excited to have the Locked On Network expand to cover the NHL. And be sure, if you're a Bruins fan or a hockey fan, check out Locked On Bruins or whichever hockey podcast for your favorite team. So that's coming up later. Now let's get into the Celtics. I want to start a little bit with Bradley Beal before I get into the Jaylen Brown stuff. It's all complicated. First, Bradley Beal, if you don't know, signed a two-year, $72 million extension. And so that takes him off the trade market. So you've heard me talk about my thirst for Bradley Beal. And so that's going away for at least a little while. You can't be traded this season now, league rules. And that still doesn't preclude teams from inquiring about him later on towards the end of the season, kind of maybe reassessing who's done well and how the Wizards have done and how Bradley Beal is feeling. It's possible that Bradley Beal can be traded, but I wanted to touch on this because the rules for extensions are so complicated and different when it comes to who can be traded and what. Beal is essentially off the market this year. So when we're looking at the Boston Celtics and how they might be constructed and possible Jaylen Brown trades, if you're going to go down that road, I know Jaylen Brown is, we've talked about Jaylen Brown potential trades for so long, and it feels like that's just going to be a kind of constant thing that lasts if he's not traded by, you know, the trade deadline up until the trade deadline. So however that plays out, it plays out. But the Bradley Beal thing is kind of gone for now, and we'll see what happens in the summer. That being said, there is Jaylen Brown talk that's been kind of out there. Danny Ainge was at the Shamrock Gala, and he talked a little bit about it without getting into specifics, but he had his comments about the extension, and among them, he was vague, but he said a couple of things that feel sort of interesting. For one, he says, quote, you need the market to dictate what it is you're going to get paid. We're trying to build a championship team, and there's a lot that goes into that. Part of it is managing payroll, and for the player, it's basically about you. It's your world. You're comparing yourself to others, and it's a complicated process some years. So Danny Ainge basically saying that the market is going to dictate what Jaylen Brown gets paid. He's basically putting it out there that it's going to be up to the rest of the NBA to set Jaylen Brown's price. That they're in there, whether you believe the 4-year, $80 million thing is real. Ainge kind of not denied that, but said it wasn't entirely accurate. There was the 4 years, $80 million. He said that a lot of offers have been made, whatever it is. This quote kind of feels like he's saying, let Jaylen kind of let the market decide. Danny Ainge, is trying to manage a payroll. And another quote that kind of ties into this, he says, every negotiation is different. Every circumstance, every year, how much money we even have. Some years we don't even want to do it because we want to preserve that salary cap space. There's a lot of things that go into how much you offer or when you make an offer for a player. That all just makes it feel like he's trying to keep his options open. He's going to let Jaylen Brown, unless Jaylen comes to a more team-friendly agreement, and I'm sure, let's just assume 480 was a number that was out there. I'm assuming that Chris Haynes, who reported 4 years, $80 million, got that from Jaylen's agent, who is, that's new. I'm sure we've talked about this. If you haven't heard, it's Al Horford's agent that Jaylen Brown is working with now. So that number had to come from somewhere. I know Chris Haynes, he's one of the best reporters out there. He's not just going to make up a number. That had to come from Jaylen's agent. So assuming that that's a real number, that's probably a lowball offer. I would assume that that's one of the initial offers. And when I've been in negotiations, I've been in contract negotiations, and you know how it goes. You start with the best offer for you. And if the other side agrees to it, then hey, great, good for you. You win the negotiations. And at 4 years, $80 million, that's a number that starts at 17 or so million in the first year, progresses up to the mid 20s by the fourth year. That's something that I'm sure the Celtics would love to lock Jaylen up for, because he'll outperform that contract. And we talked about this on the show with James yesterday. So I don't think that Jaylen Brown is obviously going to accept that. He's going to try to play himself into a bigger deal. And by the quotes tonight from Danny Ainge, it feels like he's just going to let Jaylen Brown kind of figure out his market value, which is probably the best thing for both sides. One little wrinkle here that is important, and it's a very wonky salary cap, collective bargaining agreement thing. We all know that Danny Ainge is always kind of lurking on the trade market, whether it's rumored or whether it progresses to the point of offers, whatever. We all know Danny Ainge is going to be active. He's going to pick up the phone. He's never going to refuse a phone call. So he's going to be out there looking. There is a provision for a rookie contract extension, the poison pill provision. And I bring this up just so you know that if the Celtics agree right now to a contract extension with Jaylen Brown, okay, let's pretend that Jaylen Brown does accept that 4-year offer at $80 million, just for the sake of numbers. The way the poison pill provision works is if you sign a player to a deal on his rookie contract and you want to trade him before that kicks in, the incoming value for the team that receives that player is the average of his current salary and the annual salary in each year of that player's extension. So Jaylen Brown makes $6.5 million this year. And 4 years, $80 million, it's $20 million per year. So the five-year average of the extension that would be signed by Jaylen Brown would be something, it would be $17.3 million. So the outgoing salary, the team that trades for Jaylen Brown, would count his salary for salary matching purposes at $17.3 million. Boston would use his actual number for that current season, this current season, which is $6.5 million. Are you still with me here? Do you need a second? It's complicated. Maybe it's not as complicated as I think because I'm horrible with numbers. But trust me, I got these numbers. I got them. The poison pill provision makes matching salaries damn near impossible because one team is dealing with $17.3 million to match, and the other team is using 6.5. So unless another team is throwing in a big salary guy and Boston is sending out a small salary guy, I mean, you can do it, but it involves other players and it makes the matching portion of it extraordinarily difficult. I bring that up because it just makes it seem even more improbable that the Celtics and Jaylen Brown are going to come to an agreement, because the outgoing salary, the incoming salary, the differences, it'd be great if both sides could count Jaylen Brown at $17.3 million. That actually helps the Celtics a lot, but it hurts the Celtics that they can only take back $6.5 million. It just complicates things to an extra level. So considering that Danny Ainge is sending all the signals that are saying Jaylen Brown, market determining value, blah, 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 it feels like he's just saying, play this out, whatever the market determines. Next year is a down year for free agency, not a ton of free agents. A lot of teams don't have money. The few teams that have money, what are they going to do with it? Are they going to save it for the following year? Are they going to save it? Even if you have cap space, I know Atlanta's a popular team. Even they're young, they have cap space. Maybe they don't go for a Jaylen Brown. Maybe they use that cap space to take in a salary dump, which is a classic move from a front office. You take in a salary that somebody doesn't want, but they'll attach a first round pick for you to accept that salary. Now you take in that salary dump, you keep your cap space for Atlanta. They've got all of those young players. You take in an unwanted salary for a year, that goes away. You still got those young players. Then in the summer of 2021, then with all of those big names that are out there, including Giannis Antetokounmpo, but other big names, Klay Thompson is available, a lot of guys are available, you have a more seasoned veteran star type player that you can add. As much as Jaylen going home to Atlanta seems like a thing that they'd want to do, I don't know that that's a commitment that they want to make. So the market may determine that there is no max offer for Jaylen Brown. And so it's then up to both sides to determine the next course of action. Does he just sign with Boston with a long-term deal, four-year, five-year deal at a value that they don't feel like they reach? Or do they do like a two-year deal? Do they suddenly turn around and say, well, we don't want to be locked up for 4 years, we do two or three? And then revisit this in a few years when the market is different. So complicated stuff with Jaylen Brown's extension. The bottom line is I think they just don't agree by Monday. By the time we do a podcast Monday or Tuesday, I just don't I don't think they agree. I could be wrong. Obviously, I could be wrong. Maybe there's a number. Maybe 100 million is a number that is palatable for Jaylen Brown. Maybe he does just do the extension. Maybe he just says, you know what? I'll do three year extension or 2 year extension like Bradley Beal did, and I'll take money for a few years and deal with it then. I don't know, but I'd be surprised, I think, a little bit surprised, if they came to an agreement. Gonna take a break. When we come back, practice update. Carson Edwards talking about his thighs. Yes, he was asked about his thighs. We'll do that when we come back on the Locked On Celtics podcast.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
The Boston Celtics were back at practice at the Auerbach Center in Brighton. And according to Brad Stevens, it was the first kind of bad practice that they've had since training camp began. And it was, as he said, kind of a function of having 2 days off for most of those guys. So they had the game and then they had an off day, so game Tuesday, off day Wednesday, practice Thursday, but half the team didn't play in that game on Tuesday. So for the regulars, it was essentially 2 days off. And Brad says it's not atypical. You know, you have a couple of days off, a little slow to get back into the swing of things. And while I think coaches obviously would love for everything to go smoothly all the time, there's a little bit in the back of a coach's head that doesn't mind when things go wrong, because then you can lay into a team. And having been on teams and talking to coaches afterwards, they do enjoy the opportunity to set a team straight. It's hard to have a sustained level of, we'll call it greatness, goodness, whatever. You know, you even go back to the Patriots undefeated season, they end up losing the Super Bowl, and Bill Belichick says that, yeah, it probably would have been better if we had lost earlier in the season. Something that gets you back into, that snaps you back into reality, a lesson learned. So just like touching fire and you realize, oh, that hurts. I shouldn't do that anymore. A bad practice gives Brad Stevens the opportunity to tell these guys, ah, you shouldn't do this anymore. And so that's an opportunity. It's not a big deal. But interesting that he says that they had a little bit of a step backwards. There was an update on Robert Williams, who left the game in Cleveland after taking an elbow to the head, an inadvertent elbow to the head from Kevin Love. He came into practice and he rode the bike, so he was asymptomatic, which means he's part of the concussion protocol. So he had the concussion-like symptoms, which means he goes into the concussion protocol, and then there's a series of steps that he has to clear. Not having the symptoms a day later is a good step. So he came in, he rode the bike, they reevaluate him after that. We don't know what that was. We don't know how that reevaluation went. He was not at the Shamrock Gala, so that's a sign that he can't be around the bright lights and all of that stuff. So he's resting. We'll see what happens. We'll be in practice on Friday and get another update. So for now, he's taking steps forward, and we'll see. Some guys go through this concussion protocol in a flash. Other guys, it takes them a long time, and something that the thing with concussions, they're so brutal sometimes, is you can go a day or two without the symptoms and then all of a sudden the symptoms hit. So just keeping an eye on him. Another element from the practice was that Brad Stevens was talking about the difference in the rotations, and it is going to depend like game to game. He said there's probably going to be five guys that you can name that are going to play a lot. And that is obviously going to be Kemba, Jason, Jalen, and Gordon. And you could probably say six, because Cantor is going to be one. Cantor is definitely going to play. And then whoever your starting center is, probably Daniel Tice. Like, Daniel Tice is going to play. But at least I would say those four, the wings, and Enes Kanter, I think, is comfortably going to play. So it's up to the rest of the guys. Like, maybe it's possible that Theis might be a guy who doesn't play. And it's going to be a challenge. And I asked Brad directly about the challenge about telling these guys that some days you're going to play and some days you're not. Which he joked, it's not a challenge to tell him, but it's not fun. But he did say that it's a special ability to be able to come in after having a DNP and then all of a sudden playing 20 minutes. And I think that's something where when you look at a Carson Edwards, that he sees Carson Edwards as a potential guy that can do that. Any guy that can sit, and Brad said this multiple times, like, I think it might be his favorite quality in a player. If a guy goes through a DNP or multiple DNPs, then gets called upon, and then he comes in and he plays 15 minutes and he plays great in those 15 minutes, that is super impressive, especially to Brad Stevens. But it is super impressive because these guys feed on the routine. They feed on this regular thing. When you know that you're going to be playing this many minutes, when you know that you're going to be a starter, a lot of this stuff is envisioning things. You're picturing things in your head. And when you don't have that regular role, it's kind of hard to get ready for a game. It just is. And if you don't know that you're going to play or not play, and if you're on the bench and you're antsy about, like, oh, is this my, is it, oh, did he call me? Oh, no. Oh, you didn't? Okay. Well, I'm just going to sit here then. It's hard to be engaged. When all of a sudden this feeling sets in somewhere in the second quarter, maybe the third quarter, like, man, I guess I'm getting a DNP tonight. It's very easy to check out of a game and not see what's happening and not stay engaged. Like, there's a normal human reaction to, like, well, I'm sitting, so I'm just a cheerleader. And I don't know, maybe your eye wanders. Maybe you're checking out a girl in the front row, or maybe you're just daydreaming about what if I did play, or maybe you get caught up in a conversation with a guy on the bench. Like, I don't know. Anything could happen when you're sitting there thinking you're not going to play, and then you just never know when, who knows, fourth quarter, tight game, a guy sprains an ankle, or gets into foul trouble, or gets a couple of techs and gets thrown out. Then all of a sudden, your ass better be ready. And if you're not paying attention, if you've wandered, you're not going to play well. Because you don't know tendencies. You don't know who's out there and who's been doing what. You don't know who's had foul trouble on the other team. You don't know how certain guys have been reacting to the coverages. So it is a big challenge for guys to stay ready. Carson Edwards seems like a guy who knows that that's going to be a challenge for him. That situationally, he might get called on to come in. The Celtics are cold. They're not hitting shots. They're down 15 in the second quarter, and Brad needs a lift. And Carson Edwards is going to be a guy in that situation who is hopefully for the Celtics going to provide that lift. And calling on him and needing him to be ready at all times, Carson Edwards said that he knows that he just has to be prepared for those potential circumstances. He said, I don't know if I'm going to get these minutes. I don't know if I'm going to play or not, but I just have to stay ready. And like I said, that's a special skill. And Edwards is going to be a guy that's going to be called upon in a lot of different situations. So he's going to be a guy that has to stay ready. The one thing that struck me about Carson Edwards at practice today was that he just, it's almost like I asked him if it didn't seem like that this is a big deal to you. Like, you hit 9 3-pointers the other day and you just don't seem to give a shit. And he's like, yeah, you know, it's, you just got to move on. You just got to get ready for the next thing. And I like his mindset. I like the fact that he said, not too high, not too low. Like, he just knows that the next thing's coming. And I feel like he's either learned that lesson or he just naturally has that mindset. But the next thing's coming. So yeah, that's great that you hit 9 threes in a game, a preseason game, whatever. Like, the next thing is this first game in Philly. And if you get 25 minutes and you suck, then that 9 three-pointer game in Cleveland and a preseason game just gets tossed in the trash heap. And it, people talk about it like I just talked about it. Like, yeah, so what? Preseason. Yeah, against the Cavs, who are going to give up 130 points a night. Congratulations, Carson. Like, so he knows. He knows all that stuff. So I just like his mentality. I think he's just kind of like, just always got to stay ready. Got to keep doing. Always got to be better. He said, you know, I made mistakes in that game. So I can't focus on, that's great. It's important, but can't focus on it. And so he was also asked about the memes that are on Twitter. He has heard about them. He knows. People talk about his quads all the time. People have turned the "See Us Rise" hashtag into "See Us Thighs." It's hysterical, but also a little uncomfortable. But yeah, Carson Edwards, you got to watch that video. Nicole Yang from the Boston Globe tweeted it out. The faces that he makes, he's just like, yeah, I don't know. People are going to talk about my quads. They talk about it. I mean, he does look like you can, like, squat a tractor trailer. But people are talking about his quads. And he just doesn't give a shit. Weird Celtics Twitter, man. Shout outs to you guys. You latch onto something and you really just bring it home. So we're going to take a break. Come back, Shamrock Gala, when we come back here on the Locked On Celtics podcast. Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram. I'm going to start this by saying, go to my Twitter, RedsArmy_John, if you haven't followed me on Twitter. You don't even have to follow me. Just go to it. Click on the media tab and look at what Vincent Poirier was wearing at the Celtics Shamrock Gala. It was glorious. Glorious, I say. It did look a little like pajamas. It was this paisley green thing that he apparently had some dude in Dubai make, custom made, one of a kind. And looking at it, there's a reason why it's a one of a kind. But these dudes go out there to the Celtic Shamrock tip-off gala every year. Everybody gets dressed up. Taco had this very nice, super long, like long on him, kind of jacket with a turtleneck look. A couple guys showing up with the bow tie look. Very cool. Romeo Langford had like a Burberry type of shirt thing going on. Everybody likes to get dressed up, but no one compared to Vincent Poirier. This is what you get when you sign a French dude. You get that high fashion, and he was bringing it, man. That shit was his runway at the Celtics Shamrock Foundation Gala. It was a nice night. It really was. They raised $1.2 million for the Shamrock Foundation. Shamrock Foundation is a thing, a charity, a charitable foundation that supports local charities in Boston. So that $1.2 million will go around to various organizations. A lot of it goes to help children, sick children, and it does great work. There was, Shemi Ogilvie got a community service award. There was a panel discussion on Playbook. If you go to Celtics.com/playbook, there is a great program that they have. It's like an anti-discrimination, anti-bullying thing. And a really important message about bringing cultures together, different people from different backgrounds together. We're just such a fractured society right now. And really, as much as we fight and we really kind of butt heads, I think it's really important for us to understand that a lot of us are the same. And not even getting into who you like politically, I'm not going down that road in this. Other than to say, a lot of the things that people think about the other side are often not accurate. And really, when you get down to the heart of it, we're all kind of the same. Like, we all want the same things. And the other political stuff is all bullshit. We're angry about certain things that people tell us to be angry about, whatever. This program kind of helps bring people together. And understanding that black, white, Asian, male, female, gay, straight, all that stuff, just if you sit down and you talk and you get to the heart of who you are, you realize that the differences, they're not so different. So it's a great program. Check it out. Celtics.com/playbook. It's a great program focusing on the youth. At the end of the night, there was a panel where Gordon Hayward, Jason Tatum, and Kemba Walker kind of spoke. A lot of the same questions. It was hosted by Mike Gorman, Brian Scalabrine. No great big crazy questions, although Gordon Hayward did kind of reveal that he gets yelled at for napping. You know, dad of three, I guess. We'll just leave it at that. And Kemba Walker says he still can't figure out driving in Boston. Good luck. A lot of people can't figure out driving in Boston. People have lived here forever. And those one-ways change all the time. And they keep changing that Sturrow Drive interchange from the Tobin Bridge. Not that I'm angry about that at all. But people can't figure that shit out either. So good luck, Kemba Walker, driving in Boston. Talking about a couple other things there. But the Shamrock Gala was fun. And read my story on that on masslive.com/Celtics. Also my story on Danny Ainge talking about Jaylen Brown and those negotiations as well. Go ahead and also subscribe to the Locked On NBA podcast, by the way. The previews, Friday is the last day of the 6-part series, all 6 division previews. I was part of this preview process. I obviously previewed the Celtics. I previewed the Atlantic division on Wednesday. I helped preview the Southeast division today on Friday. So go ahead and check that out. Subscribe to us. We're the number one Celtics podcast on iTunes, thanks to you and your 5-star ratings and your good written reviews. We're daily. We're free. And so is every podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network, all your daily free team-specific podcasts, including NHL podcasts. If you're a hockey fan, NHL is now part of the Locked On Podcast Network. So you know, local experts covering the biggest news, and now it's on the ice with the hockey podcast. So check out the upcoming season preview for Locked On Bruins and find your favorite NHL team on the website, LockedOnPodcasts.com/NHL. We'll be back on Monday for more daily free Boston Celtics podcast. Thanks for listening. This has been the Locked On Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello, my name is Ian McLaren, and I am the host of the Locked On Boston Bruins podcast, a new daily podcast on all things Spoked B. The Boston Bruins are coming off a devastating Game 7 loss in the Stanley Cup Final at the hands of the St. Louis Blues, and the question is how they will rebound and compete in 2019-20 regular season. The odds are stacked against them to get back to where they were, and it seems unlikely that they'll be able to repeat last year's success based on the fact that so many things went right for them along the way. The Tampa Bay Lightning, the league-leading team, was bounced in the first round of the playoffs, and Boston was able to overcome a 3-2 series deficit at the hands of the rival Toronto Maple Leafs in order to advance. And that's just to get to the second round. This season, the main roster is pretty much back, and the core remains intact. There's a couple changes at depth positions, but it's basically the same roster as last year. Anything less than a top 3 spot in the Atlantic Division will be seen as a disappointment. The Bruins still have one of the best lines in all of hockey in Brad Marchand, Patrice Bergeron, and David Pastrnak. When they're going, this team is tough to beat. David Krejci remains a key piece down the middle on the second line, while Jake DeBrusk, Danton Heinen, Charlie Coyle, and others look to build on strong postseasons and take a next step for this team. Yaroslav Halak and Tuukka Rask provide a great combo in net, and the defense is as solid as ever. So will this team be able to replicate last year's success? It's hard to say, but it doesn't look like they will indeed return to the Stanley Cup final. There's just so many good teams in the Eastern Conference. Tampa Bay, Toronto, not to mention Washington, Carolina, and others. But anything can happen in hockey, and we're in for another wild ride. Buckle up and make sure to listen to the Locked On Boston Bruins podcast, your favorite hockey team every day.